Okay.
So on this particular item, since this involves your activities and updates as the executive officer, you know, I want to publicly acknowledge your personal efforts in the communication and organization of the 4.0 ag order. I've been over 8 years on the board, and you're the fourth executive officer that, you know, I've been working with, if I include the acting executive officer we had for a short period of time. And so I have seen 2.0 and then 3.0 and then as we move. And when I give my updates, you know, in meeting in Sacramento, meeting with DPR, meeting with CDFA, meeting with Cal EPA, meeting with the governor's office, you know, those are long days. And, you know, driving together back, you know, getting home close to midnight, I want to acknowledge, you know, the efforts you're making in really helping communicate where we are, where we're going, you know, the level of transparency. And I think an element that, from my exposure, has improved significantly compared to some of the earlier versions of Ag Order is the level of communication with our sister agencies. And also bringing them in and say, hey, give us your input. So this is not Region 3 doing its own thing. So I want to acknowledge your efforts because, you know, one of the things we need to remind ourselves, we got a heck of a lot of other things aside of the Ag Order. No, it has quite a bit of, you know, a big bandwidth here, but if you look at all the other business that we have to attend on a day-to-day base, I mean, it doesn't stop. So when you're away with me for 4 days, there's a lot of work that waits for you at the office. So thank you for what you're doing.
Thank you for that. I appreciate that. I deeply appreciate that. And with all humility, I will say that Chris Rose, Arwin Wyatt-Mayer, and Elaine Saul make me look good in those meetings. And it's the staff that support them that make this thing go specific to 4.0. There's staff that are making the other things go while I'm away, too. And the AEO, too. He's doing a pretty fantastic job. Thank you, though, for those. I appreciate that. Okay, moving on. Executive officers report, item 11. The 401 cert tables, standard 401 cert tables, covering that is 401 certifications, covering applications received, 8, and certifications issued, 14 of those, for the period of July 30th through September 19th, 2018. And I wasn't going to cover that any more in depth. I also want to acknowledge that you should have a supplemental for the EO report. It's just modifying a Table 5 attachment. Okay, moving on to the grants program update from Katie McNeil. First, there was a US EPA and State Water Board approved the 319H grant for approximately $100,000. This is for post-Thomas fire and flood assessment and a development of a restoration plan for Carpinteria Creek watershed in the South Coast. And the Central Coast Water Board staff will manage this grant. Additionally, EPA and the State Water Board also approved two Prop 1 grants, one for the City of Pismo. This is a regional groundwater sustainability project. The grant value is about $1.7 million, and there's about a $350,000 local match. This covers project planning for injection of advanced treated recycled water to prevent seawater intrusion impacts. The other Prop 1 grant is SoCal Creek Water District. they've come up with a clever name, Pure Water Soquel. I don't think we've heard anything like that before. No offense. This is for advanced recycled water treatment project planning by the Soquel Creek Water District. It's $1 million grant with a $3 million local match, pretty significant local match. This covers project planning for the local groundwater basin replenishment, creating more water supply, portfolio diversity. We talk about this. This is climate change resilience. Moving on, the next item is the old Avila Beach. Talk about another big project. This is the Avila Beach Cleanup Project Mitigation Fund, and we're moving around some dollars to some very small, very specific projects to attempt to close out that fund. It's actually harder to close out funds than you might imagine. And those two small projects are listed there. One is Nature Conservancy BMP implementation for an Irish Hills property called the Andre Ranch. And the other is funding a small research project for UC Davis for the development of numeric pesticide thresholds associated with two neonicotinoid pesticides. Okay, moving on. Now, we provide a Buckley Road update, and just as a reminder, 12 wells in the Buckley Road, which is right across the airport from us. You could almost throw a rock to it. 12 wells exceed the drinking water standard for trichloroethylene. Some recent actions include well sampling. Prior to this recent event, our last well sampling was in 2017. Last month, we completed an update of well sampling, and staff is awaiting analytical results on that. In terms of source identification, that's something that's been really challenging for us. And investigations have been conducted on three properties beyond the airport, which was a prior investigative phase. The most recent property investigation was completed in late September, and this was funded by a grant from the State Water Board, and staff are currently evaluating results from that investigation. Preliminary results, though, show that elevated trichloroethylene concentrations are beneath the property, suggesting something significant there. As a follow-up, three groundwater wells will be placed in close proximity to this area to further delineate the extent of the elevated TCE concentrations. Further, we'll be looking to potentially hold our third public meeting sometime in the first half of 2019. That's something we're considering right now. Additionally, staff are constantly updating the community by virtue of one-on-one interactions during well sampling events, and also via our web page and email server list. And actually, an email for that came out this week, updating individuals on our list. Any questions on that? Dr. Hunter?
Thank you, John, and I appreciate seeing some of the specifics in terms of the information that's been developed through these investigations. So my question is, short of discovering the source, which sounds like it may be some kind of remnant activity that was going on where there is now a house or several houses, and this entire area is either private wells, right, so, or industrial wells, so there's right. No municipal water supply coming into this area?
I believe there's a small system out there, or there might be a few small systems, but there's no city water. City water doesn't extend, right. City of San Luis Obispo water does not extend to this area, you're right. It's all on small system or individual household wells, yes.
Okay, and is there replacement water? For people whose
most of the individual well systems have treatment systems already on board.
Oh.
So they've at their own expense, typically, they've gone and installed treatment systems to clean the water before it enters the house.
So this has occurred since the discovery of the problem?
I think primarily, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, since the discovery.
And what kind of system
so
is it?
They'd be carbon filtration. That's the most effective, mm-hmm. given the concentrations of TCE, that's the most mm-hmm. effective treatment mm-hmm. For this compound.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's good to hear. And in the long run, what type of remediation, if you know at this point, would be required?
So I'm gonna kick that to Taya Tryon, section manager who oversees this project.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
Good morning, Taya Tryon. And I'm gonna bring Sarah Treadwell up. She's one of the caseworkers on this case. And I wanted to clarify one of the comments. Because the domestic wells are pulling water from a bedrock area, the taste is not very good. And so a lot of these property owners already had treatment systems in place, so that was good. But we made sure that we communicated with all those that had concentrations detected to work with them on activated carbon, making sure that their drinking water is properly treated. Mm-hmm. In terms of where we're at right now and what source type of remediation we would probably do is first identify where it is, and these additional wells that John was mentioning, we are depending on domestic well results and some one-time depth discrete samples to identify where it is, but now we're installing permanent wells that are screened in the different zones. Mm. They'll get us a better idea of how groundwater's flowing and where it actually is. And then the next phase will be to target cleanup. The geology in this area is quite complex. It's very clay, and then there's some sand gravelly zones, and most of the water's at the just above the bedrock, around 100 feet. And then there's also some shallow wells along where the creek runs. Mm-hmm. So more than likely what the remedial approach would be is bioremediation. Mm-hmm. Pump and treat doesn't make sense, really. And natural attenuation is a process where once you cut off the source, you allow the water to continue to flow and it'll clean up through the elution.
Right.
So that's more likely the approach. At this point, we're still waiting to identify the responsible party. And that was also a complicating factor in replacement water because
right.
we did not have an identified responsible party to require the replacement water from.
Right, right.
Did you want to add anything, Sarah?
No.
So it just to so I'm clear, and I appreciate all of that information. It's still very likely or likely that the actual source is from something prior to this area becoming developed for residential use.
The area where the highest concentration was found is a machine shop that's still operating today.
Ah.
So.
Okay.
It's an industrial residential mix mm-hmm. kind of neighborhood. So mm-hmm. a lot of the industrial facilities are still there to this day.
I see.
The first one was in 1960, and that's the one that has the elevated concentration right now. But we still need to do some further delineation to see if there's other properties where there's targeted zones. Because the thing with trichloroethylene is like a very small amount can cause those really high concentrations. So mm-hmm. sometimes it's finding a needle in the haystack kind
of. Oh, yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, listening to the updates, it's apparent mm-hmm. that it's been very difficult.
Yep.
Are the industrial operators there, are they cooperative and aware of what may happen in the future?
Yes, and Sarah and Dean Thomas, I don't think he's here right now, they are very well recognized in the community. Sarah talks to people quite a bit. Would you say that they're comfortable with the
yeah,
where we're going?
We speak, there's two industrial properties, Knoll and the property on the corner. And we speak with them every time we go out and sample. So they're always curious to know what we're doing as far as sampling in the area and how the investigation is going. We're in, I would say, constant contact with them.
Good. Okay. Those are really, I had not realized that there were industrial operations, that it was entirely residential. Okay. Well, those are my questions. Thank you.
I'm just curious. You say a small amount of TCE can cause these concentrations. I mean, so this isn't necessarily like a storage tank that leaked or something. It could have been something much smaller, or?
Like it could have been a bucket of TCE that was, like a small bucket that was dumped a long time ago in a dry well. It's because it dissolves slowly, it dissolves at a concentration that far exceeds the drinking water standard.
I remember working at a machine shop in the 1970s and taking a rag and cleaning oil off machined parts with TCE.
Yes.
No gloves.
It was a great, it is a really great solvent, and that's why a lot of people used it.
Yeah, in the electrical power industry, and you had PCB power transformer, sometimes a PCB was used also to degrease, and we weren't thinking too much about it, so. A lot of progress, but also the threshold levels are very small. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that I think that also adds to the complexity. So the one item that, you know, maybe we need to keep in the radar for first quarter 2019 is giving a more general update, again, in the form of a town hall meeting like we had done, where we invite County Public Health, you know, to come and then give basically an update. Certainly, it's great to give it to individuals, but I think bringing the community would help, because I think it's important for us to, you know, put our best foot forward, considering that this is an issue that has been lingering for a long time. Mm-hmm.
So I would ask, instead of committing to first quarter of 2019, what I would like to do is see the next couple of sample results to see if there's a need to go even further beyond the wells that have been installed, so that we have more of a complete picture instead of we don't know where it is, and then have that public meeting. I think that would be a little bit more satisfying for the community to know a little bit more finality. So I'm hoping you can give me that flexibility to kind of determine what the right timing is.
So then I'll put the question back at you. When do you plan on doing your next round of sampling?
So the monitoring wells that I was just telling you about, they were installed
This week.
So we'll need at least two quarterly sample results from those to see what the concentrations are. And if they're still high in those wells, we're going to want to step out further to make sure we've laterally delineated the plume. Mm-hmm. And that will help us determine where the bullseye is, pretty much. So
yeah. So when I was saying Q1 is, I like to, I'm going to use a word that was very popular yesterday. I like to quantify things. So that's why I was saying Q1, but there's no magic about it. It's more giving updates. And I do agree with you. You know, when we had the last meeting, you know, it was still, well, we don't know. And that doesn't bring level of comfort to people. And also it could be misconstrued as we don't know, because we don't know what we're doing, and we certainly don't want to inadvertently have those type of optics. Mm-hmm. So I agree with you, you know, when we'll get more substantive information, let's do that.
Yeah, and one of the other complicating factors are that, you know, typically these types of investigations go quicker, but because we have financial constraints for the individuals that we're requiring to do this work, and there's a grant or a process, it just takes longer.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
in your communication, understand the individual communication, is that in a form of a letter, or is it just that they have access to information on the website? And also, is there any kind of like a newsletter that goes out to everybody with kind of here's the status of where we are in past 3 months, next 3 months, or next 6 months, something like that?
So we have several ways that we communicate with the well owners. One way is face-to-face, and we do that generally when we're out taking samples of their well, which we just did the last week of October. We also have a LIRIS email subscription, which not only goes to the well owners, but all interested parties. And that's done regularly every, we try to do it when we update our website. We have a Buckley-specific website. So anytime a EO report or a new investigation report goes up, we try to send those emails out so they get that. I know all of the well owners that Dean and I deal with have our contact information and call us whenever they have a question. And we try to extend that out to any new owners that we might meet when we're out there sampling as well.
So are they aware that these new wells are being installed and sampling now would take a period of time before they can expect to see some confirmation with valid information? They're aware of this process going on?
Yes, in fact, we talked to several of the well owners that were available to talk with us when we sampled. And we told them the investigation was going on, and as soon as we had some concrete answers for them, we would express it either in a meeting or a general update. And we also just updated our website with reports that are coming out of that investigation as it's ongoing, so they can kind of follow it.
All right, so thank you very much. Mr. Robertson, next item.
I was going to just add to that. Sarah made reference to Dean. Dean Thomas is the other staff person. You're familiar with Dean Thomas, a hydrogeologist here on staff, is the other person participating on that project. Okay, the last item, I think, yes. The last item I have is the Salinas Basin Ag Stewardship Group update, status of the interim replacement water agreement in year two. This item provides notification that the year two work plan and the revised underlying agreement have been approved by all three parties. That's the State Water Board, the Regional Water Board, and the Stewardship Group have all agreed on the year two work plan and agreement. Year two focuses on identifying locations and providing replacement water to domestic well-served properties. The first quarterly report is due from the Stewardship Group to the Water Board this month on that. And staff plans, I think, a little bit more robust update at the March board meeting, I think, on this. And I just want to make note that this is coming at the same time and trying to integrate with our domestic well sampling project that is also going on in Monterey County and the Salinas Basin, where this project, the stewardship project, is focused. And we're trying to make sure that there is good communication between these two. They're not siloed, our domestic well project and the stewardship group's effort here.
I had a question on that domestic well update. I know that I think it launched last month or end of September. So I was just wondering if you could expand on that a little bit, Mr. Keeling, and then if there's any discussion on the nexus between the work that's going on with stewardship and then the CWC work that'll be occurring. Maybe that's back to Mr. Robertson.
I'll defer the latter part of your question to Angela Schroeder regarding coordination between Community Water Center and the Stewardship Group. With respect to our domestic well, again, this is Matthew Keeling, With respect to our domestic well project, yes, indeed, we did roll it out last month. We focused our initial outreach activities in Monterey County. That consisted of a meeting with the County Board of Supervisors where I gave them a brief overview of the project, answered questions. Prior to that meeting, we also met with two individual County Board of Supervisors, Alejo and Salinas. And then we followed up with the county environmental health program director, John Ramirez, provided them with outreach materials that they could make available at their permitting counters. And then we initiated our Every Door direct mail outreach flyers. Interestingly enough, and I think the stewardship group is experiencing similar issues, response rates in Monterey County have not been what we would hope for or anticipated. Most of the responses to participate in the program occurred within San Luis Obispo County, and where there was pent-up demand in follow-up to our more focused county-level drinking water sampling project that we initiated a number of months ago. So we had a fair number of people requesting sampling in the Paso Robles area, as well as parts of South County in Arroyo Grande. I haven't had an update on the response rates in about a week or so, but I'll be checking in with our project consultant on that to get new numbers moving forward.
And then I think, as I'm sure you're aware, I know you're aware, that you know, throughout the Central Coast funding area, which is our hydrologic region and our Region 3 area, you know, Monterey Bay, Greater Monterey, and then the Monterey Bay IRWM regions are participating in the DAC outreach grants and needs assessments. And so is there overlap there? Is there sort of cross-coordination on some of the same people you're targeting?
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up. We have been in communication with the Central Coast funding area through, is it Tim Carson?
Yeah, it's Tim Carson, who is administering the entire grant for the Santa Cruz Foundation.
Yeah, and so he is aware of the project. We provided them with the outreach materials. Some of the members of that group, in particular Santa Cruz County, John Ricker, is also inquired about when we would be phasing our outreach and sampling in Santa Cruz County. They're poised to refer residents within their county that may inquire about well sampling to our project.
So the Santa Cruz Foundation is administering the entire grant on behalf of the Central Coast funding area, but all of the IRWM regions have their own discrete processes. So I know that it's Byzantine as usual, but Greater Monterey, IRWM, and Monterey Peninsula are separate IRWM regions and so have their own needs assessments going on. So perhaps linking up with the, and Angela probably knows this in detail, but linking up with those IRWM region heads might be more effective than working with the Santa Cruz Foundation on those particular areas. Certainly John and Tim can speak to Santa Cruz issues.
Yeah, and I've done so particularly with respect to the Greater Monterey County, IRWIMP, through my involvement in their disadvantaged community identification and needs assessment process as being a participant on the TAC for that funded effort. So they're fully aware of the project and they're in contact with Heather, now with Community Water Center, because of her involvement in that effort as part of the IRWIMP. So as we move through the other counties, we'll be reaching out to those other specific IRWIMP groups to make them aware and try to help us with our outreach as we go forward.
Yeah, you've been doing a great job, so I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So John, I'll just add a couple of details about that. So first, Angela Schroeder, section manager, we staff did meet with the stewardship group in Monterey County just yesterday. So it's very high level coordination going on with respect to year two. To your question, Ms. Gray, we are heavily relying on Community Water Center. One of their explicit tasks in their agreement is to go through our entire region's IRWM, the DACI grants, to identify the players and to begin to help us collaborate these programs. There's so many overlapping areas. There's the domestic well testing program. There's the stewardship group. There's our individual replacement water actions. The county has their own human right to water resolution that will go to the Board of Supes on December 4th in Monterey County. So they have their own programs. And Community Water Center has really stepped up to help us sort of to get some roots into that collaboration. And they're just coming up to speed, but very deeply committed to doing that. So we'll see how that progresses. To Matt's point, outreach really is sort of this conundrum that we're dealing with in all the different programs as to what the effective outreach is. Explicitly in the stewardship group's work plan is, if outreach is not effective in year two, we're committed to exploring what better models that might be. Interestingly enough, you've heard of the San Luis Obispo County Well Testing Program, which was highly successful, and we believe it was for two reasons. One, because of our Jacqueline Tack here on staff, our Young Civic Spark Fellow, who really was out in the community on social media and promoting this project, as well as our coordination with the county. We haven't done that level of sort of in the community outreach. Our outreach with respect to both the stewardship group and the well testing program has been more mailing flyers and that sort of thing. So we're trying to figure out what is cost effective and what will reach the community. But we're certainly looking at those efforts.
Another portion of the outreach that I forgot to mention is we have a partnership with our State Water Board Office of Public Participation staff. They put together a very robust community-based outreach plan with a focus on disadvantaged communities. They've been attending local events in Monterey County. EJCW Community Water Center have also been doing, to a certain extent, some door-to-door outreach. So that is also occurring.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on. I mean, RCAC and EJCW, and you know, it really, we have a big region, but I think, Angela, to your point, there's a lot of different ways to engage. There's certain entities that are already embedded in the community and have the trust, and so it's this, you know, daisy chain of organizations. So I appreciate the update, Angela, and for your leadership on that issue.
You know, one thing is, I know you're familiar with it, but it sounds some of it like an alphabet soup for me with, you know, all these, or, you know, I'm trying to put in my head an organizational chart, so I'm assuming there's linkage between all of these.
There's not a chart, it's kind of a web, so I think you have to, you know.
Hopefully another spider web.
Spiders are effective.
Yeah, but depending which one, yeah. So I have just one very quick question before we close this item. Any new enrollees in the stewardship group? Because, you know, you have members, yeah, who, or, you know, anybody else has signed up?
Their membership is very high. In fact, I want to say that we have nearly 100% membership above 100 acres in the Salinas Valley. We have had a couple, I'd say there's been three parties who have decided to pursue investigative orders on their own, which allows them to demonstrate that they have a real minimal discharge. For example, a couple of vineyards have done that. And then we have another small farm that opted out of membership and has, based upon their terminating agricultural activity. So we have a very high level of membership in the stewardship group. In fact, we've been talking with them about potentially expanding membership to other areas in future years.
Yeah, because I think, you know, certainly it's important to look at what the end results are, but without having buy-in from the farmers, you know, this is not going to be a successful program. So I'm glad to see that it's not status quo.
And as John mentioned, we will bring the stewardship group to the board in early 2019 for a very robust update.
Okay, sounds good. So,
I'm going to add a couple of points onto this.
Go ahead.
Matt, in his humility, didn't acknowledge. He also went and spoke in terms of outreach and the domestic well sampling project. He also went and spoke with at a recent SGMA meeting for the Salinas Groundwater Basin at the request of Alejo, Supervisor Alejo. I wanted to acknowledge that. Very well received. And then also, we're adding a layer of complexity. This is actually a spin out of, I think, WQCC in terms of human right to water. There is a wastewater component that we rarely discuss, and that is something that we're trying to layer into this, is how do we address inadequate wastewater systems associated with disadvantaged communities and environmental justice. And that's Dr. Hunter and I last night, Board Member Gray and I, during WQCC, were having good discussions centered around the new authority at the State Water Board associated with forcing consolidation of wastewater systems. Layered into that, the state also has to bring the money to that equation. So, there's going to be an inherent tension. Do we have the money? Should we require this? But I think this is a place that we collectively want to explore with that new authority. And that layers in another part of complexity to this discussion, but it's all good.
Can I just say one thing? Poor John had to sit next to me at WQCC, and so just to kind of, I'm sorry, what did you say?
I said something about beneficial spiders.
Oh, yeah. I won't go on with arachnophobia if you have it or not, but but yeah, you don't like spiders. I like spiders. Anyway, John, thank you for bringing that up. And John had to sit next to me at WQCC and endure me for 2 days. But I appreciated, you know, the discussion that we had on all the topics. And I just to kind of, riff off of what Chair Wolf was saying, I appreciate, you know, just your alacrity with all the issues, your ability to be responsive and weave it into the work that we do, your nimbleness and your compassion in doing so. So thanks for that, for all the time.
Okay, the last thing I would acknowledge is the supplemental that is included with this EO report item addresses some, let's call it overzealousness in reporting on enrollments in a general order. And we wanted to make sure that table 5 of the executive officer's report was accurate. So the supplemental corrective or errata sheet for that. Okay, and that's all I have. Thank you.
All right, so this was the last item. So at this time, I would like to conclude our meeting. So this will conclude our November 9th Regional Water Quality Control Board meeting, and it is 11 o'clock. So thank you, everyone. Have a great weekend, and see you in December.
Except for me. I won't be making December's meeting.
All right.
Just so you know now.
But you will not be here physically, but you will be here in spirit,
I'm sure. Get briefed. Anyway, I might get briefed on whatever's on the agenda.
All right.
Speaking of briefs for December, please see me before you leave. Thank you.
Who?
Board members. You.
Me?
All of us.
You. All of you. Thank you.
Okay. Is that a threat? All right. Thank you very much.